All right, Barry Bloom joins us, Forbes.com. Barry, how are you?
Good morning.
We're doing well here, a gorgeous day in the Bay Area. No hitters in baseball. The Padres have never had one. I admire Andy Green for trying to get one with Tyson Ross the other night. We got Manaea gets a no-hitter with a little bit of controversy on one of the calls, but not major. But what a week of no-hitters, near no-hitters and a no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, having been, one of the guys with more institutional knowledge than just about anybody, I mean, I've covered the Padres in some form or fashion for 43 years, and I've been waiting just like everybody else for that first no-hitter. And to have it on the brink the other night and to have, Frenchy Cordero misplay the ball out in center field that was the only hit, you know, kind of stung a little bit because we were all hanging on it. As you know, Ted Leitner has done something like 7,000 baseball games, all in Padres, and he's never broadcast a Padre no-hitter because there hasn't been one. And he was downfalling at the end. I do applaud Green, and I love the fact that he said that in this particular case, you know, history took precedence over over winning a game, and that's why he gave Russ so much rope there near the end with 127 pitches. And I think Russ could have talked his way out to at least get the first batter of the ninth if the no-hitter was still going. But just in a little behind-the-scenes thing, talking to Greeny afterwards, and Leitner came in, and, you know, we were talking about it in terms of we have far more institutional knowledge and have been around the Padres than anybody even in there's nobody even in the current club who has a quarter of it. And Greeny looked over at Leitner and he said, you know what, I was thinking of you, which tells you all you need to know about, you know, where this guy was and the head he's got and how important and significant a thing this will ever be if the Padres do get that no-hitter.
Huh, very good. Good story. We were lucky to have StatCast, which told us that Cordero misplayed the ball. Did you need that or could you see it?
No. I mean, in fact, off the bat, and I talked to a couple of scouts over here too yesterday, Ed Lynch, you know, we both said the same thing. Off the bat, it was a catchable ball. But when I saw Cordero take a step in and then have to go back, he just didn't have enough to get back and get the ball. And then late in the game here, the ball jumps. I mean, Boach was talking about that the other night. There was a giant Diamondback game where the seventh inning on, the ball was just jumping all over the place. And he said, geez, what was going on? And I was joking, and I said, they probably just ran out of humidor baseballs, you know. But the ball does just jump here, and just Cordero couldn't get back on it. And, of course, Cordero hit the mammoth home run, which had given them a 1-0 lead at the time. But if they had Margot to put into center at that point, even as a defensive replacement at that point in the game, he probably would have caught that ball, no doubt. Mm. You know, it's just typical Padre history how things never match up.
All right. Well, that was the beginning of the week, and then we had, of course, had the game here last night. But I look around baseball. There are teams that are just awful, and the Reds have fired their manager. They've been awful for 4 years since Dusty left. Jim Riggleman, who, left Washington and wasn't going to put up with the guff that they were going to, you know, have him put up with in Washington. He walked away, and now he's the manager of the Reds. But there's so many teams that are doing nothing in baseball. I just looked through it this morning and mentioned a bunch of them. I think it's almost alarming.
Right, and it leads me to believe that, you know, Mattingly in Miami and Cash in Tampa, you know, that they're going to get hung out to dry at some point this year, especially with the new ownership down in Miami. And Jeter probably wanting to make some changes as he's moving forward with that. They don't see Mattingly's lifeline very long there. Those are the two that really jump out at me at this point. I mean, Philly seems to be holding its own. So the early commotion about how Kapler was managing has kind of quieted down. But, your point is perfect. I mean, I've often said it and often written it. Dusty was 91-71 with that team – in his last year, and it went to the playoffs, got knocked out in the first round, or I think it was even the wild card game, and he was fired. And then Brian Price was fired the other day with like a 410 winning percentage. He just never gained any traction there. Even in the first year when he had a lot of the holdover of the same players from the testing teams that were so successful. And then as they started, you know, shedding players and the pitching staff, I mean, you know, this was a pitching staff there that 5 years ago was, you know, Johnny Cueto, a healthy Homer Bailey, Bronson Arroyo. You know, they had five very credible starters and Chapman as their closer. And you go around the field and, you know, they brought up Todd Frazier. They had Votto, obviously. I mean, he went around the field. It was a very representative team. It just couldn't get over the hump. And then they tore it apart. And, you know, Brian Price paid the price, not to be, you know, a cliche here. But, it was inevitable.
Yeah, we saw him in the playoffs. Let's face it, Arroyo had the shutout and Latos pitched game five. And if Cueto didn't get hurt, that probably would have been a much different series for the Reds. But Jim Riggleman is there. Boy, you know, it's a name that, is he still around? You know, this is like how long? He's been around like 30 years or more, but now he's the manager of the Reds. What do you think about Riggleman?
Yeah, well, I just wrote a piece on that for Forbes the other day, and, you know, I think Riggleman is one of my favorite guys. He goes back to, you know, my days and my last days covering the beat in San Diego in the early 90s when he was hired there to replace Riddick. It was his first job. He bounced from place to place, a lot of it, you know, by his own doing. He, you know, is a very, you know, a contentious guy and doesn't back down. And, you know, we had the situation with Rizzo in with the Nationals where, you know, he wanted to at least sit down and have lunch with Rizzo and talk about picking up his option for the following year. Rizzo refused to have lunch with him, and he quit. And it was at that point that he never thought he was going to get back into the game again. But, you know, at turning it local, you know, it was Bochy, who Riggleman had hired as third base coach when he was with the Padres and ultimately replaced him when he went to the Cubs, who threw out the lifeline and Sabian and brought him back into baseball that year to scout, because that's the way the buddy system in baseball works. And, you know, and he even said, you know, in the piece that I wrote, we'll never forget those guys for doing what they did at a time when nobody wanted to touch him. And then Jocketty brought him back into the organization, and he managed a Double-A, Triple-A, came back to the big leagues as a third base coach and then bench coach. And he was a logical replacement at this point, you know, to replace Price and try and stabilize that team. And hopefully he'll get more than, like, you know, 140 games to do it.
Barry Bloom at Forbes.com with us. We'll wrap it up with this. You did get to see the Giants, and you've been watching them since early in spring training. What is your opinion? Trending in the right direction, wrong direction, as we sit here today, April the 22nd? How do you feel about the Giants?
I'm bullish on the Giants. I still think that they're ultimately a 500 team that can be in contention for part of the season. I wrote the other day that, you know, they seem to have weathered the storm of, you know, when you start the season and you're into it and you don't have Samardzija, Bumgarner, then you lose Cueto for 10 days. Your closer, Melanson, hasn't thrown a pitch for you all year. You're batting like 230, less than, you know, practically 20th in the league. Your run scoring is down about the last, you know, it was 51 going into the game. They scored 8 runs the other night. You know, they've weathered all this, and you look at their record, they're like 8-12 going into today's game. So it's like, I think that they've done just fine. I think you noted on Twitter that, you know, with Pence probably being benched, maybe going on the disabled list with the thumb, it gives Mac Williamson a chance to emerge. And he did something right away for them. You know, they're a team that's a little bit in transition, but you know that McCutchen and LaGloria are not going to hit the way they're hitting, and Posey's the way he is. And I watch Crawford still. God, I'm in awe every time I watch him play shortstop. He's just so much fun to watch. He's just one of the top defensive shortstops in the league. And, they're a pretty solid team, you know, all the way through. And I think once the pitching gets back into shape, you know, they're younger guys who have to fill in the gap, you know, the blocks, and they had Holland, you know, come off the scrap heap. Stratton has been very good. You know, they got some really, you know, tough work under fire there the first month of the season, and they proved that they can do it, and there are more young guys to come. So I think they'll be fine.
All right, very good. On a Sunday of April 22nd, Barry Bloom, I appreciate you being on. Enjoy the day, and we'll talk next week.
Yeah, I always love being on. Thanks, Marty.
All right, that is Barry Bloom, Forbes.com.